Today's show is brought to you by Cufflinks.com, our presenting sponsor. Go to Cufflinks.com and use code GOT20 to get 20% off all officially licensed Game of Thrones products. Whatever sigil you wave, you'll find it. Tie, cufflinks, hand of the king or hand of the queen pins, whatever you want, you got it. Go to our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com/DVR today. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. My name is Axel. You can find us at podcastwinterfell.com. We are here tonight to talk about Season 8, Episode 4. I don't know what the title is, but maybe my co-host this evening, Gina, may know. Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I think this episode is called The Last of the Starks, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I thought that's what it was called when I saw it. But, you know, I don't know if that's the official one or the one that they were just promoing it with.
Oh, okay.
But I think it was called The Last of the Starks.
That's kind of an underwhelming name.
It is.
I thought it was going to be like the
Last
Queen
of the Starks
Fire.
Find out that one of them is not really a Stark, yeah. Or at least a full, you know, the Stark they thought he was.
That's true. Okay, so we're here to talk about Season 8, Episode 4, The Last of the Starks. I'll also be back with you on Wednesday to talk with Heath Solo. We're going to be doing our deep dive. I'll do feedback on Friday. And tomorrow, DJ will be getting together our roundup on the YouTube. So we'll tweet that out at Winterfell Pod when we get it and on our Facebook group. But tonight, we're just going to talk about this episode and initially react. Gina, I'll let you start. What are your impressions? Anything you want to talk about? Let's just do it.
I mean, you know, I liked the episode a lot. I think, you know, it went through kind of a lot of the, you know, proper channels of saying goodbye to those who were lost, which mm-hmm. was fine. But I loved the feast at Winterfell. It was just like, you know, so many interesting conversations and like side-eye looks across the room at each other. And so much happened at that feast. I was glad that we spent a lot of time there with the characters after the battle. It's like another like slightly nice moment before wherever the rest of the story is going to take us in the next couple episodes.
I'm so glad that you started there because to me, I absolutely love that scene. I just wanted it to go on and on. I wanted more of it. I thought there was, just like you were saying, like, you know, Danny looking around the room, Sansa looking around the room, Jon reacting, Jaime and Brienne and Tyrion and Pod.
Yeah.
And it was just, I did a little pre-show with Justin and Hax and a couple other people in deep and Johnny. And I was saying what I'm most looking forward to is just kind of, I'm looking forward to the setting of the pieces, you know? I want to see where everyone stands. Because where we left off was Jon telling his girlfriend, you're my aunt, and I'm the king. So
yeah.
where are we now, you know? So this scene was great. I loved, like, every part of it I loved.
Yeah, no, I did too. And maybe we should just talk about more about it for a minute, just because finally, for me personally, as a Sansan shipper, I finally got my Hound and Sansa reunion as brief as it was. And it was perfect. You know, yeah. It was, he kind of acknowledged everything she'd been through and she got to tell him how she got rid of Ramsay with, you know, the Hound. And, you know, he's just like, none of this would have happened to you if you'd gone with me. And she goes, little bird, which I was hoping he'd say. And she's like, yeah, but then I never would have grown up to be anything else.
Very Bran-like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. And her putting her hand on his hand. And that was when that happened. Right. And he kind of recoiled a little bit and, you know, especially after that scene where Pod, if you looked in the background, the other girl who the Hound pushes off meets up with Pod and the other girl, and Pod takes both of them.
I missed that.
Yeah. So you have to look over Sansa's shoulder and you can see Pod is standing there with the one girl and then the other girl is near and he puts his arm out and grabs her and then he grabs both of them and they walk off.
So that's awesome. Well, you know, he's used to handling a few women at once. So yeah. For him.
Pod the Rod, right?
Yeah. Pod sex god.
It was, that scene was great. And I think that that was really important too, because as we come to see with, the secret of Jon's lineage getting out faster than, what's that old saying? They're like, tell her this, tell her Sansa. Tell it, right? Like she just, and I agree with her because yeah. I've always been one more that keeps to the spirit of the law. So I guess she told an oath that she wouldn't tell anybody, but I'm glad that she did. But it was good that that scene kind of told us, the audience, hey, Sansa has grown up, right? She's making decisions. She's not that little bird any longer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think she's definitely no fool, for sure. I think she was around Cersei and Littlefinger and even Ramsay enough to know when something is off and when something smells bad. And I don't think her distrust of Dany is displaced at all. Everyone's like, oh, give her a chance. And I think Sansa's just been through so much that she's able to see through people, I think, a little more clearly.
Yep.
Than before. And so, she's no fool. And I think it's interesting because a lot of what this is coming down to is there's a certain greed for the Iron Throne from, I think, both Dany and Cersei. And I think there are a handful of people that understand there's something bigger at play. And, Varys has always been, this is about the realm, and even Tyrion doesn't really understand what that means. But I think, Varys, Sansa, Samwell, and Davos are probably the four people that understand the most, kind of that there's something bigger than whoever just sits on that Iron Throne.
Yeah.
That it's about the people at the end of the day. It's not about, and who's leading them and actually cares about them.
Yep. Well, we totally agree on this, Gina, because I thought that all the machinations of this episode, which just let me say, and just part of like the initial reaction, I love this episode. It was like one of my favorite episodes. I don't know why, but I didn't expect again, like the first couple episodes, that we'd have so much character development and people talking in rooms, which I love, I want to spend time with these characters, and punctuated by, of course, intense action. And you're like, holding on to your seat while you're watching it. But this was just, all this stuff was just fantastic. And I agree with you that, that thirst, like you say, for the Iron Throne, by Dany here in this episode, it really came through. And I thought, you don't hear this often, everyone likes to, make fun of D&D, but I thought that this was great writing, great pacing in an hour and 20 minute episode to really build up. I think it tied into a lot of the stuff we've seen before with Dany and the conversation she's had with Tyrion and Selmy, I just thought it was pretty perfect. I don't know how they could have done it better, because we've been seeing this for 8 seasons with her.
Yeah. And I mean, she was in that scene with John, she was just so desperate. Oh, she's like, God. I've never begged for anything, but I am begging you. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, it's starting to unravel. And she is, I feel like now more than ever, she's well on her way to becoming a mad queen. The last time we saw that, as justified as it may have been, was when she lit all the Dothraki calls on fire. Mm-hmm. Because I left that episode thinking, how is that any different from her father burning Ned Stark's father and brother and all the other lords that supposedly they burned?
I, um, I agree with you, Gina. I think that this has always been a struggle for Dani. And there have been times where I've rooted for her, Khaleesi, you know, and I've, you know, the breaker of chains, but it's always this balance that she's had a hard time with. And as Tyrion said, how can you blame her? She walked through fire with three stones and came out with three dragons, right? She's been told this by first by her brother, then by Khal Drogo, you know. So, but it's just like, she just never relented, you know, and that she never just sat down, and there was never a conversation where she was like, maybe I shouldn't want all this. You know what I mean? We've never seen that in 8 seasons. And this conversation with John, remember when she said to him, if everybody finds out, then you're going to take away from me my rightful throne. And yeah. I'm sitting there saying, but wait a second, Dani, if you have rights to the throne because your dad was the king and he was killed, then doesn't that mean that John actually has more rights than you? Oh, like yeah, it's the same totally. Lineage. So you're right. Desperate is the word. I love that you used that word because it was desperate. Even her face, she was really, this was a great acting episode for Emilia Clarke. She really stood out.
Yeah, I think because they've had her be so stony throughout the whole thing. You know, I mean, we talk about Bran being kind of a, you know, kind of a just like a stony lack of emotion character now that he's the Three-Eyed Raven and Sansa to an extent. But I feel like Dany has been that way pretty much all along up until last week when we saw Jorah fall. That was the most emotional I'd seen her ever be on the show about a loss of anyone or anything, even more so than Khal Drogo. And now this desperation is something new. Like maybe we saw it when the warlocks took her dragons before, but other than that, never.
Yeah. And it's really started in that scene that we were talking about where she looked at like kind of all the groups and her face started to change. And then Varys looked over at her and noticed what was happening. And
The Varys looks, Varys is so sharp and like he can read a room, and he was definitely like his radar was up. He's like, something is very amiss. And I think it became very clear later in his conversation with Tyrion, like, you know, who he's going to side with in the end. I think he's, you know.
let me ask you, did you get the impression that he basically said to Tyrion, I'm going to kill her?
I don't know if, well, stop her, make sure she does not take the Iron Throne, perhaps. Like, that would probably lead to having to kill her.
Yeah,
that
how else are you going to do it?
Stop her.
Yeah, like there's no, because when Tyrion said, and what becomes of her? And he said, I've been as honest as I can. So does he have a plan? And act like who's going to do it. And I was surprised that he didn't do it before the meeting with Cersei, you know, because if you're going to do it, do you think that has he been back channeling or something? I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, he was the one carrying out Robert's orders to have her killed for so many years. And particularly when Robert found out she was pregnant and, you know, married to the Khal. And so I think Barry still has those connections. And as far as we know, that hit could still be on her. You know what I mean? He never formally called it off. I mean, they thwarted it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it was ever, officially called off.
So you think that it could be like someone from, was it someone from Essos or something, maybe even a faceless, like I know people were saying Cersei's going to hire a faceless man to take out Dany. Maybe it's going to be Varys that does it.
Maybe. That would be really interesting.
That would be pretty cool.
We still don't know what that voice told him when his parts were thrown into the fire to the Lord of Light.
Ooh, that's true. And we don't have Melisandre anymore to...
I know.
to whisper that he's not, you know, maybe we'll find that out. And maybe it's something like you know, she's just like her father.
Something had to happen for him to go across the narrow sea to become part of the machine that is the politics of King's Landing. You know, it seems like Melisandre, she had a very kind of set, you know, life purpose for the Lord of Light. And it almost seems like maybe that instance set Varys on a life purpose as well, to come over, get involved in, you know, everything happening in King's Landing. And maybe this is part of his end game. Like, he's got a purpose to fill.
That's a good point. You have in the notes here something that I thought was great. You did great notes, by the way, about Dany losing everything in reverse.
Kind of. I was thinking about that. That was a question, like, interesting. The three questions I wrote down before the episode started. But, you know, because it seems like she lost a lot of her ships last season. You know, she's lost one of the dragons. She lost a lot of Dothraki and Unsullied, and she kind of acquired those armies in a certain order. But now I just think she's losing everything she's gained. You know, most of her armies, I think almost all of her ships now, after the last attack that we saw, she's lost Jorah, she's lost Missandei, she's lost two dragons. Like, she's she's losing everything. And I think that, combined with just the fact that, and also John being having a better, you know, claim on the throne.
Her story.
Yeah. All she's got left really is that dragon.
And let's talk a little bit about the dragon going down. Rhaegal, right?
Yeah.
I was utterly shocked. I mean, it was a little bit, it was slightly, I thought it was weird for a second, because they did, you know, they did like a Titan and they kind of pull back and you see the majestic dragon, and there's always that one beat they left, like that one beat, and then the arrow, huge bolt hits it. But I had thought John said, "I'm taking the horse because Rhaegal needs a break," or something like that, you know? So it threw me off. And then it was like, was that an instance that Dany was so intent on bringing the dragons again that she made the kind of tired, sick dragon go with her, which was John's dragon, and now it's dead?
I mean, maybe. I think it actually more goes back to what, you know, Sansa was saying, is like, you know, this army is tired and a lot of them are wounded and they need to recover. And I mean, honestly, her dragon was tired and it had been wounded and it needed to recover. And she, you know, kind of forced everything along anyway. So, you know, and, you know, she's in a rush. She wants to get the job done. And I think she's not thinking very clearly in terms of protecting what she still has. Because clearly the faster she moves, the more hasty she is, the more she, you know, more and more she's losing more. So
that's true. That's true. It's like quicksand, or the more she tries to grab it close to her, or like teenage love, the more, right? You overwhelm and they're like, get away. Like, can you just let me miss you? You know, Dany is, and you're right. And it goes with that desperation with John. And I do feel for her. I do have some empathy for the fact of what Tyrion said. And also, as what you outlined, how much she's lost. And then with Missandei too, which was, and then when you look over Tyrion's shoulder and you see her still bleeding out, like, the production is amazing. The you know, everything they put into it. That was, which one for you was more of a gut punch, Missandei or the dragon?
I hate to say it, but I think the dragon. You know, and I think it's not, you know, I knew at least Missandei or Grey Worm was going to get it in the end, you know, before this was all over. You know, they weren't going to have their happy ending on the Isle of Narth. But I just think I expected Jon to ride that dragon into battle another time against, you know, in King's Landing, and landing against Cersei. And so I think that's why it was more of a shock, and that, you know, she lost such a huge weapon, which I know Missandei was important to her, but in the scheme of winning this war, the dragon is more important.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely true. And it's just shocking too, because it's just such a large beast, you know, just to see it crash into the ocean like that. And the way that the first bolt hit, and then it was like, boom, boom. And then one went through the head, and you're like, oh, it's definitely dead now. You know, like when the first one hit, I was like, okay, maybe like, remember when the Sons of the Harpy attacked, they put so many spears into the dragon. So I thought maybe, okay, it's just one, you know, maybe, or, and also the loot train.
Yeah.
You know, but nope, this time it went down, and it is such a loss. And man, again, the face on Emilia, she was just, you know, oh, just utterly devastated. And then you think too, you know, my wife said to me, as the dragon went down, I was like, oh my God. And then she said, well, what does it even matter if she tries to use the other one? Now they can take that her down too. So it was shocking. And Missandei, they built up that stuff over many seasons, and I liked it because I thought it was good to see people that weren't the kings and the queens and all that, you know? And I liked their representation on the show. I liked those characters. It was, like you said, it was kind of obvious one of them was going to get it. We thought it was going to be Grey Worm last week, but he survived. But just the way of cutting off her head like that, and she was so sweet. And then how she said Dracarys, and she's like sending a signal to Dany. You know, like, before I told you not to do it, we'll do it. And if we remember something, Missandei was actually harder than many of the other people who were advising Dany. Remember? Because she was the one who said, like, the slavers will never learn. They'll always do this. Like, Missandei was often a person who kind of encouraged Dany to use some power. You don't have to do too much, but to use it. And because if you think about how she was freed when Dany just turned her dragon on Missandei's old owner, or which it was, her owner, you know, that's kind of how she got free, you know? So it makes sense that it would be Missandei's death that pushes her to go overboard.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of heartbreak in this episode, both with the deaths and then, you know, with some of the relationships as well. Kind of sad.
It was a sad one. You have in your notes too here, you think John might really die now.
You know, I just felt like those goodbyes at Winterfell, I'm like, he's definitely going to die now. Like, he and Tormund do like the big bro hugs, goodbye. He sends Ghost with him. I'm like, you're giving up your dog, you know? And then just the whole thing with Sam and Gilly, and oh, if it's a boy, we're going to name the baby after you. I was like, oh man, I think he might be dead. Like, this just is not like stacking up well. It's like too many heartfelt goodbyes, like, this is the last time we're going to see you guys see each other.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but because they have done so many goodbyes before, but in the context of there only being, you know, two episodes after this,
right?
You might be right about that. And you know, it's just weird, Gina, we find ourselves after the Night King is defeated and it's triumphant. Arya uses her ninja assassin skills. They win this overwhelming battle. And then it's just not that happy after, you know? And we see that it really is more confusing than people thought. And, you know, it's the cleanup that is getting messy, and then diving right into this battle with Cersei. I said, you know, maybe this episode, we're going to jump ahead a couple of months, you know, they're going to chill, but they didn't. They were the ones to march down there. I don't know. Queen of the North. I'm just with Sansa this season. I think that she's the only one speaking just a balanced, let's feed the people, let's think about it, take our time, get healthy, do the job, gain other support, get other houses. But this war against Cersei does not look like it's going to end up well. You asked in your notes, who do you think is the greedier for the power in the Iron Throne, Cersei or Dany? I'm not quite sure which one at this point.
I know. I think they're both. I mean, Cersei's definitely awful in her own way. I mean, she didn't need to behead Missandei. She chose to anyway. Yeah. You know, lying about her pregnancy. Oh, yes, Euron, our son or daughter will rule the Seven Kingdoms. I'm like, you are such a bad liar. You know, she's just, I don't know. She's awful. She doesn't, you know, neither of them care if they burn the city down.
Yep.
And I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, wow, these women are just, they're at their very worst.
They're just like their fathers, right? They're,
yes. Oh my God. Yes.
They're unfortunately falling into that. And you know what? I know that there's complaints of writing, or they're kind of pushing them into a corner, or like the mad woman trope is definitely a trope. Like, let's not pretend. But in this case, it's well earned, and it's not. And with the, you know, ultimate power corrupts ultimately, and they just have too much. But there's something about the way that Cersei responded to Tyrion that I still don't quite get what's going on there between them. You know, she wants to kill him so much. She always threatens to kill him, but I think she loves her little brother. And, maybe it's the connection to Dad, the connection to Jaime, the fact that it's her brother. But I just can't help but think that really the crazier one, Dany, is stressed out and acting irresponsibly and has in the past, but Cersei really, like, she enjoys hurting people.
Yeah, she does now, for sure.
Yeah.
And that has steadily grown over the seasons.
Yeah. And I think gathering all of the people into the Red Keep sounds to me like a good opportunity for her to kill a lot of people and to use them as human shields and not to care. And, you know, you said desperate before, the way that Varys and Tyrion were kind of desperately saying, like, let's not kill all these people, you know, like, don't fall into Cersei's hands. And it's just unfortunate that we've got only these two episodes left. We had our big battle with the magical people, and still all these people just want to kill each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we're definitely in for another bloodbath next week. And then I do wonder, will the last episode, will we get that kind of, you know, a couple months have gone by and get to see rebuilding or not? I mean, we know that at least humankind is safe from the White Walkers, but I think it's a lot harder for humans to come together and rebuild a society, as we've seen on shows like Lost or The Hunger Games or, you know, any other type of dystopian or survival, or The Walking Dead. You know, it's another one. It's like sometimes rebuilding society is uglier than trying to get control over power for it. So
That's definitely true. Going to take a little break from Gina and I to talk about cufflinks.com, our awesome presenting sponsor. Do you have an event coming up, a wedding, something where people are getting together and dressing up? Go to cufflinks.com/DVR and they'll take care of you. Maybe you want to have a GOT themed wedding. Then use code GOT20 and get 20% off all officially licensed Game of Thrones products. They've got it all. Or you can use code DVR20 whenever you want to get 20% off anything, no minimum. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today. Now, you brought up two in the notes here about Euron and the baby. And didn't Tyrion kind of give it away?
That's what I thought. I'm like, they're okay. So if you just told Euron you're going to have his kid, you know, and Tyrion saying he knows you're pregnant. It's like, what'd you do? Send out like birth announcements? I mean, Euron, is he, hopefully he puts two and two together. I mean, yeah, I don't like, know.
Because isn't the whole point of Qyburn and Tyrion meeting there is because they can't trust ravens and stuff like that. They're only communicating in that way. It's not, you know, so it makes me think this though. Did Tyrion give it away, or does he give it away to us that Tyrion has been back channeling to Cersei and Euron knows it?
I mean, I don't know.
Just a guess, you know, just a reason why he would not be upset, because maybe Euron's saying, well, I kind of know that she's still talking to her brother without Dany knowing. So, that's how we know she's pregnant. But as soon as Tyrion said it, I thought they were going to cut to Euron, and they didn't cut to Euron. So it doesn't seem like that's a plot point, or else this show usually cuts to the person when they're finding out some information.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. It seems like that would have been a big moment for Euron to be like, how does he know, you know, because I mean, when Tyrion found out, it was, you know, at that meeting last season. So he's known for some time.
Yeah, it was months ago.
Yeah, months ago. So who knows? Yeah. But, and now Jaime's on his way back to King's Landing after a very exciting reunion or coming together of he and Brienne, which I was like, oh my gosh, this is happening. It was like Gendry and Arya all over again. And I guess I should have known since Arya like basically stomped all over Gendry's heart and turning down his marriage proposal that we'd see Jaime stomp all over Brienne's heart as well. I was just like,
But it would have been sweet if they had. I thought it kind of would have been cool for the show to allow them to go past that tradition and to have Gendry say something like that, or even say something like, well, it's going to be my castle, so you can be any kind of lady you want to be as long as you're there with me. And if you want to go off and kill people and murder them in the night sometimes, I won't ask any questions, honey.
that's actually what I was going to say. Like, Arya could have been like, hold that thought. There are a few people on my list that I need to get to. And if I come back, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it could have been a little more like, you know, maybe.
But the Jaime and Brienne thing was, I thought, really well done. And Nicholas Coster Waldo, his acting and Brienne, Gwendolyn Christie. Wow. I mean, his face, he was like, he was almost trembling while, you know, and how he was kind of drunk, and it was just, you're just not used to seeing Jaime like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, she's the only person that hasn't been related to him that has ever actually loved him or cared about him. And I think, you know, there's something to that. And, you know, and the only woman he'd ever been with before was Cersei. And
is that true, Gina?
Deal for both of them.
Didn't he say that in the show that he had only ever slept with his sister?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay. That's what I thought. So it's kind of interesting that they kind of both lost their virginity there in a way, you know?
They did. Yeah. That's kind of how I think of it too. It's like, you know, with, you know, kind of someone new that you want to accept you and, such a bummer. It's like when I saw him like putting on his shoes or whatever, I'm like, don't you leave her. And then I was just like, oh, damn it.
And they did the, you know, I'm watching it. And as soon as they open with him on the chair and she's in the bed, I said to myself, cause I can't help. I said, they're going to pull into her in the bed. We're going to hear a noise. They're going to pull back out. The chair is going to be empty. That's exactly what happened. And even though it was slightly, predictable cinematographically to me, I still bought it. And her outside saying, you're a good man. I'm not a good man. I pushed a little boy out the window for Cersei, for Cersei. And let me ask you this. I saw on the Twitter, because I can't help checking that damn hate-filled place. I love it, though. That's like where we met. We all met on the Twitter, right? But why do you think he's going there?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, clearly she wants him dead. Like, if Bronn showing up threatening them both wasn't sign enough, I mean, I think I don't necessarily think he's going to protect her. I think he's going to try and stop her and maybe talk her out of it. Like, maybe he is deluded enough to think that he still has some influence over her and that he can talk sense into her.
That's what I think. I think the same thing, Gina. Some people were saying, because of the method that he gave that speech for Cersei, that he was saying, I have to, like, I love her. I can't escape her. But I don't think that's what he was saying. I think he was mad about it. He was regret. That was part of what made him bad. You know,
yeah.
I'm bad.
Maybe he's gonna go off her.
Yeah, right. I think so. I think it's, I think we may be, you know, I know the whole Valonqar thing is not in the show. But I think that it's a good guess that Jaime is trying to go there, and it may end up with him killing her or the mountain killing him. Maybe a kind of redo of the scene with her and the mountain and him when she let him go. A lot of echoes. We're getting a lot. We got to start thinking again about that 17 years ago, about where we started, right? The Mad King, Jaime, Varys. Some of these people are still there, and other people are taking their metaphoric role in this.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely going to be interesting. And I think Cersei's demise is something that I think about a lot, because I really detest her as a character. And so, like, part of me thought, oh, she'll die in childbirth, giving birth to a dwarf baby like Tyrion. Yeah. And, you know, that's like one of them. But then I do think there's, you know, I've thought maybe Arya will kill her wearing Jaime's face.
Oh.
But baby Jaime will kill her, push her. I think someone said it last season on one of the playbacks, he'll push her out of a tower saying the things we do for love. But I, you know, I'm kind of hoping with Arya and the Hound heading down to King's Landing together that they do a lot of plotting and planning along the way. Like, they both want to kill the mountain. And I think killing the mountain is critical to Cersei dying.
Yeah, it's like Dany's dragons.
Yeah.
You know, that's her mythical being protecting her.
Yeah, and Qyburn in a weird way.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, that's...
And Euron. Those are her three dragons right now.
Nice. All right. And well, maybe we'll see one of them fall. I just want to say that when the mountain's riding, I mean the mountain, when the Hound is riding down and then Arya comes up and he's like, oh God, you know, and they're riding together. I was so joyous because, you know, I've said it a million times on the podcast that I could watch a whole season of them two just hanging out, because that was some of the funniest, sweetest, most meaningful, It was emotional, the talks they had, the things they learned together. And I thought they were just taking a little ride around the castle, you know? And then when they were like, we're going to King's Landing together, and she's like, I'm going too. I was elated, because I was like, oh my God, maybe half of the next episode will just be them on their, like, you know?
I hope for some good scenes.
Yeah.
I mean,
come on.
Yeah, they were a phenomenal pairing for sure. I mean, that's what I think made season four, in my opinion, like probably the best season of Game of Thrones.
And they have to stop by and see Hot Pie.
Oh, I really.
I guarantee
Hot Pie one last time.
They have to do that. They have to stop by and see Hot Pie. That would be awesome. And I just think it's great that they're together. But that could be it for Arya. Like, Arya, really? She just left.
She did. And she said, I don't think I'm ever coming back. And
Gendry, and Sansa.
Same thing. And it was interesting because I think in season four, he really trained her. That's kind of when she first started becoming a little murder baby.
Yeah.
His murder baby. And I just kind of think this ride down, she has an opportunity to teach him interesting things like, well, this is what I learned, along the way.
I hope we'll see it. And I was happy, but I was taken aback. I can see the Hound just leaving and we get no scenes of him really saying goodbye to people. I mean, really, who's he going to say goodbye to? Beric's dead, you know? Maybe Tormund or something. But for Arya just to leave, we don't even get a goodbye with Sansa. We don't get it. I mean, she just left Gendry. That poor sucker. He's going to be beating out a lot of weapons, man. You know what I'm saying? He's like, Gendry, you can stop making the swords now. We don't need any more. And he's like, Arya. You know, he did so good in that scene where he was like, I love you. And she is she turns it on and off, you know?
Yeah.
Turns it on and off. Crazy. So what else we got? Tormund. We have to mention Tormund.
Yeah, he was brokenhearted over Brienne. What do you say? This fucker from the south comes and steals her away from me. Sounds like I don't give a crap.
That was great. I was just waiting, because I love when directors and cinematographers, when they do this on purpose, where you know it's a typical shot, you've seen it a million times, you know they're going to pull back, and you're just waiting to see who he's talking to. And then it was the absolute best person for him to be talking to. It was the Hound, who just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And I just, Tormund is so funny. I love that character. There were some memes going around where, like, Tormund and the Wildlings at Castle Black, a spinoff series, you know, like a three camera studio sitcom. That would be hilarious. I love the, but I love that they brought that up, right? Like, they're even in this episode here, like, we have to keep on thinking about the future. Like, maybe we won't see Tormund again. You know, and they just mentioned that they went up there, or maybe they'll go to Castle Black again, but I wish they would have talked a little bit more. I wish John would have said something like, I spoke to Dany and she said, Castle Black is yours. There's no need for the Night's Watch anymore. Let the wildlings use that and we'll live together now, you know?
Type of resolution.
Yeah.
If we're not gonna see him again.
I would have liked that, you know, cause Dany gave Gendry his legitimacy. I thought they'd give the wildlings their legitimacy, you know, or at least offer it.
They could have given Bear Island to Tormund. There are no Mormonts left as far as we know.
As soon as you said that, I got the shot they used in my mind. That was awesome, right? That castle, it was so circular and it looked so awesome. That was cool. But yeah, poor Tormund. He doesn't. And also, by the way, does anyone remember that Tormund said he had two daughters?
Yes.
He said, he said, John, he's prettier than both my daughters. But I guess how many, he might, wildlings, they just get it on, you know, they just have pups. I guess they've got a lot.
Yeah,
of
I think and affairs with bears, and we've heard that story, and giants. So Tormund gets around.
Yep, that is true. That is true. Well, you know, we covered a lot. Let's talk a little bit about where we think we're headed. Is there anything else you want to kind of cover from the episode?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
I think we talked about
it. But yeah, I mean, where we're headed? Oof. I don't know. You know, that's the one thing about this season. You know, we all knew it was only going to be six episodes. I just feel like they're in such a rush to get it over, kind of like Dany in a rush to try and get that Iron Throne. It's like, I just feel like maybe it was a budget thing, but they could have taken a little more time. And
really?
I think
I thought they took a nice, it wasn't the beginning was nice, you know. Oh, you mean them rushing to the battle?
Well, yeah. But just I think that's just rushing to the end. Like, I just feel like, okay, now we've only got two episodes left and we're going to have another battle next week and then the end. And it's like, do we really only need one episode to wrap everything and everyone up? I don't know. Well,
this is invariably, we'll always say this. I mean, when Lost was ending, we were all like, how could, there's no way they can end. You know what I mean? Like Breaking Bad, whatever show, you always say that. And I have to say that I think that is a consequence of showing how Danny, John are just, they're really just not great leaders, you know, they're just not, and maybe not yet. Everybody learns, right? I mean, Robert wasn't a great leader, you know, the Mad King wasn't a great leader. There's been a lot of people who, even if they tried, they didn't succeed, you know, and we both agree, Sansa was right. They should have waited. They had no reason to do this. I came in here on the live stream this afternoon. I think I said, I expect them to want to wait and Cersei to send a golden. I thought that we might have a battle, another battle of Winterfell right after this one. I like, as they were burning the bodies in the beginning, I thought maybe the Golden Company was going to come riding out and start taking people out because Cersei wanted to take, but no, they pushed it. And it does kind of feel rushed, but I think that's because our characters are impetuous.
Mm, true.
No, they just, they're, and let's not forget too, they're like 23 years old.
Yeah, that's true. They're all kids.
Yeah, we often forget.
For like Davos and Varys and Tyrion.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I think sometimes in the discourse and in the fandom, you know, we forget like Arya was supposed to be like 11 when this started, right? Sansa was like 13 or 14. Jon was 17. How do we know Jon was 17? Because they said a million times in the first season, 17 years ago, Ned, when you came here with a baby boy. You know, so that's, and now John's what, 24, 25? I mean, when I was 24 or 25, actually, I was telling my wife a story about when I was 24 and 25, and we were both laughing about what a moron I was. You know, it's, I mean, come on, you know, and you've got the weight of the world on your shoulders. So I think oftentimes in when we watch something that's written out, we expect that then the characters should act accordingly, right? And I find it to be good writing when they don't, when they make mistakes. And that's why I like this season. I like where it's going. And I think Dany is going to get on that dragon and make that vision from the House of the Undying come true. Next episode, 10 minutes in, I think that she's going to burn and maybe she'll die herself, get a couple bolts caught in her dragon, because it's going to be a suicide mission.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think like where it all ends and goes, it's like, you know, does Danny die? Does John die? Do we think Danny is going to have a, you know, John baby, a baby of fire and ice? Mm-hmm. I don't really think that's going to happen at this point. I think something would have been said by now.
Yeah. I think, you know what I think? Let me say this, Gina. I think that John, just like his daddy, is going to walk in there when it's all over.
That could be interesting.
Just like Ned did. He walked up on Jaime, and Jaime was sitting on the Iron Throne. And maybe we're going to have John and Davos stroll on in through the gates of King's Landing. Everything in ruins are on fire. And out is going to stumble Jaime or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's a circle, and this story is all about foreshadowing and coming around again, and will a different decision be made?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's really, yeah, it's all going to come down to who's going to kill who's going to die in the end, who's going to end up on that throne. Will it be someone on that throne? I don't know. Or will they try and do a new form of government? I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be Danny.
No, yeah.
I don't.
No, I said this on the Twitter. This story began, if you think about the history of Westeros, not the podcast, and I do think about them because they're great, but the Targaryens were the first to unite all of Westeros, right?
Right.
The Conqueror.
They created the wheel.
Yes, exactly. So How is breaking the wheel having another Targaryen rule? That's the exact opposite of breaking the wheel. I never wanted Dany to rule. I don't dislike her character. I love the actress. I think she's done a great job. But I think the story has told us again and again and again, guess what? At some point, she's going to have to decide really whether she's her dad or not. And this is it. We're going to find out next week after 8 seasons of wondering. She's either going to go on a suicide mission and she's going to kill lots of civilians and Varys is going to be there, or she's not. Or I got to throw in a little theory here. Are you ready for it, Gina?
I'm ready.
Did Varys already do something to the dragon or Dany? Because I find it particularly strange that he was ready to tell Tyrion he was going to kill her or he was going to take action. And then she's right there about to go do the thing he didn't want her to do. And he's not doing anything. So did he already do something? I don't know. Just a thought.
Do you mean, I'm just trying to think back
poisons,
when we're having the bigger conversation.
Yeah, just something. You know what I mean? Like maybe, like I said, maybe he's back channeling to Cersei or I don't know. If she had a saddle, which I want them to have saddles and they never have saddles on the dragons. You know, he could have rigged it or something, but I just feel like that shot, I don't know. It just felt strange to me to have that big scene. This show loves to do that where somebody makes some major threat, but then it just keeps rolling.
Well, I mean, I still think Varys has a lot of connections. I don't think he would want to see Cersei on Iron Throne. I think that if he's backing anyone, it's definitely Jon. But he's got his own connections in not just in Westeros, but in the other lands.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? Anything you think might happen or anything else or whatever you want?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess just like things that we think will happen. I guess we're probably going to see a Clegane Bowl. I mean, I don't really need that. I mean, I do want to see the Mountain die, but I don't think the Hound can do that without Arya. So maybe that's the reason they are going down together.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Clegane Bowl. And you know what? I don't want to ruin anyone's fun. If they've been looking forward to it, they've been looking forward to it. But I've said it before, I don't really see the point in a character like the Hound, who we've seen a progression of emotion, of openness, of his humanity developing, that it ends with him killing his brother. If anything, it should end with him helping his brother in some way.
Well, I don't think his brother's really human anymore. Yeah, but also, remember when Sansa approaches him at the table and she's like, oh, you should have went with her. She might have made you happy, at least for a little while. And he's like, there's only one thing that will make me happy. And I honestly think that is killing his brother.
You know,
because if it was going to be Sansa, he had his chance right there to try and woo her or stay, and he did not. So
that's a good point, Gina. Maybe it's just a pacifist in me projecting that onto the character, because that could be meaningful to him. And in a sense, as other people have pointed out when I've mentioned this, perhaps killing his brother would be a nice thing because his brother's not really alive, like you just said.
Yeah. And I mean, his brother's awful. Cersei's monster. Cersei's dragon.
Yeah, terrible. And I want to know, I love the appearance by Qyburn here because I like that creepy dude. I still think he's got something else up his sleeve. I don't know. I just think it's a lot. You bring somebody back to life and all that. Just one dude, you got to have a bigger plan than that. You know what I mean? Something else is going to be going on. I still think maybe Cersei's going to blow up King's Landing with wildfire because she used it twice. You got the rule of threes. But only 2 episodes left. So far, I've loved this season. I've been really happy. How are you feeling going in? I mean, this is the penultimate episode that we're going into next week. Are you? I know you're feeling like it's going fast, but I mean, I know you're excited. Are you happy with what's happened, how it's going so far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I know there were a lot of critics after last week, and I thought some of it was just silly. It's like, why shouldn't Arya kill the Night King? It's like, this is what she's been training for since pretty much the beginning. And now we know. But no, I've really enjoy it. You know, I read the books. I started reading the books after the first season because I'm just like, I need to know what's going to happen next. And I abandoned, as someone that used to do a lot of theater stuff and try and do a lot of adaptations from like book to stage, at some point you just have to be like, listen, this is going to be what it's going to be. Yep. And they're doing a pretty darn good job. And yeah, it's completely departed from the books. And I've accepted that and it's fine. And I wish other people would be a little more just lenient of that. You know, it's not going to happen the way it does in the books, but I've been enjoying it. I think they're doing a great job. It is just still like a huge question mark of how is it going to all end up, which is good, you know?
Yeah, me too. It is good too. And when I'm asking you, what do you think is going to happen? And you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know. That's an answer. You know what I mean? I know we're doing a podcast, but there's a lot of things I don't know too. And when we were coming into this episode, I can try to come up with something, but really I'm enjoying the feeling of not knowing what's going to happen. The dragon gets taken out. I had no idea they'd have this meeting with Danny and certain. I'm really excited going into next episode. I do hope people can kind of let go and enjoy it. The books, of course, they're going to be deeper and better. They're just not even worth talking about. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think honestly, like, we're in for a double whammy, right? The books are probably going to end completely differently from how this show ends, which means we have a whole different opportunity to see how this story could end. It's like the best, it's like the alternate ending, the best alternate ending possible. You're going to have the way the show ends. You're going to have the way the books end. And it's going to satisfy, you know, I think all groups of people with one or the other. So,
yeah. And I'm super excited. I've been talking about it more and more because was it yesterday, the day before yesterday, I went to the library, support your local library people. And I reserved Game of Thrones, got the illustrated kind of big print edition. And I am going to start reading and I'm going to read all these books and I'm going to podcast about it. And it's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to it. I just wanted to wait until this was done because I kind of have like a one-track mind that I'd probably get confused about things, and I'd end up just talking about that every podcast would just be how it's different from the book. So now I can actually do a podcast where I'm comparing. I'm doing the opposite of what everybody's been doing. I'm going to be a show watcher who's reading the books, and I'm going to compare and say, oh, that's interesting that they – I already know all this. They've cut out so much stuff. I'm super excited. I want to thank you, Gina, for coming on tonight. You've been great on our roundtable. I know we're going to hear more from you in the future as your podcasting career is blossoming.
Yeah, I got a lot of work to do before June 4th when The Handmaid's Tale starts, but I'm working on it.
That's going to be awesome. I can't wait. And I still have to... I'm still haven't watched it because I might have to watch it without my wife because that's a tough show, as we've talked about when we podcasted about it, you know?
Yeah, so. It is a tough show. They released a new trailer for season 3 last week and I'm super jazzed because it looks like it's going to be really awesome.
Okay. I'm gonna tell my wife that, and I think that will give her kind of the hope to keep watching it because it was just it's depressing. You know what I mean? It's tough.
And I think you guys probably have like a 3 or 4 more episodes to watch.
Yes.
Season 2 maybe.
Yep.
There's definitely a couple things that happen that are hard to swallow, and you're like, they really didn't have to do this, but there are also some really amazing things that happen. That I think leads to where season 3 is going, which is, I'm much more excited. And it's kind of like had me rethink that first initial podcast I put together. I'm like, no, I'm going to go back and I'm going to do something different because now I know the direction season 3 is heading in and I've got other good stuff to put out there that I've recorded. So,
well, that's awesome. Cause I really enjoy, I got a sneak peek and I loved it. I thought it was great. Awesome. And, of course, I mean, that's why you're here with me tonight. Cause you're fantastic. Thank you, Gina. I really appreciate it. Do you want to give your goodbyes and then I'll take us out.
Yeah, just, you know, thank you so much for having me on. And I also really want to thank Matt Murdock, because I think that's actually how I heard of you guys. Is I started listening to the show when he was doing it. I was recovering from a bad knee injury and needed something to listen to while hiking and was missing Game of Thrones. And so I just want to thank him too, because in some ways he's the way I found you guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and just kind of threw everything podcasting together. And I know he's doing his alternate Game of Thrones podcast now, which I'm listening to, but
me too.
Yeah, I just want to thank you and thank him. And just like the whole crew has been awesome. And the call-in shows have been really fun too. So it's a good group. It's fun to just like totally nerd out on this stuff. So I love it.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Gina. Yeah. Matt is the best, and Matt will be my next guest co-host for the penultimate episode next week, the initial reaction. Matt Murdock will be here with me, and you can find him at Matt's Game of Thrones audio blog. You want to find the podcast? If you just search Matt's, it'll come up on any of the podcatchers you have. He even gave us a Clef Notes that I put in at the end of the feedback episode on Friday. So if you want to hear that, you can go back and listen to it. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Gina, this is fantastic. I can't wait to hear you on Handmaid's Tale pod, because that's going to be amazing too. And I'll have caught up by then. Now I have a reason to do it. You know what I mean? I can kind of light a fire under the wifey and say, let's get this done. I will be back on Wednesday with Heath. Friday or Saturday, I'm going to do feedback. Got a special guest coming in from that. DJ Tim will be back for you tomorrow on the round table. We got a couple people ready for that. Have fun, everybody. Enjoy this episode when you rewatch. We're going to talk about it more. It's going to be super fun. Oh, and the cool thing, next Sunday before the episode, I'm going to be on the pre-show with In Deep Geek on his channel. That's going to be crazy. There's going to be like 5,000 people watching me. I'm going to be nervous. I'm going to have to comb my hair and look nice and everything, but it's going to be great. Robert's fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. So we only got 2 more weeks left of this show. I'm going to try to enjoy it as much as I can. So thanks everyone for listening. Peace out. All right. All right, I promised on Twitter that I would sing this song to everyone, because I know people have been having a tough time with Game of Thrones, and maybe you're a book reader, you don't like what they've done, maybe you don't like something they've done for some other reason, or the way the story has worked out. But all in all, the most important thing is that we're here together, we're talking about it. It's okay not to like something, it's okay to have opinions, we all have opinions. But it's also okay to let other people have their opinions. And every night before my son goes to sleep, I sing him this song, because I want him to know that in the end, don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. You didn't get to see that ghost get petted by John, the thing you love the most. Don't worry, be happy. It's just a TV show. You watch the dragons and one will die. Is Danny crazy? I don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. You go on Twitter, get all mad. You yell in all caps, you act so sad. Well, don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Oh, don't. Do-do-do, just a TV show. It's all fun. Don't worry now. Hey, the books are better. It's okay. Do-do-do-do-do. They're books. They're awesome. Yeah. Hey, everybody, it's a TV show that we watch on Sunday, and it's fun. Don't worry now. Come on. Do-do-do-do-do. Don't worry. Be happy now.